Welcome back to Fresh Take. I'm your host, Josh Duclos, with conversations to get you thinking, not tell you what to think. Glad you are with us. Zach Morris still holding things down for us in the Myron Construction Studio. And joining us for our conversation this hour is Sarah Bassing Sutton. She's the Community Suicide Prevention Coordinator with the New Mental Health Connection. Sarah, welcome to Fresh Take.
Thank you. Great to be here this morning.
So glad to have you with us. And this conversation, of course, begins as part of our Life in Motion series. We take data points from the Fox Cities Life Study, and we do a deep dive. When new data comes out, we're looking at what the numbers tell us and talk about what we are doing about some of these trends in our community, positive, negative, or otherwise, with those who are working on it in the community. Of course, the Life Study data is available online if you're interested in looking at it. FoxCitiesLifeStudy.org is the website, and there you'll find countless interactive graphs, data points, and indicators. You could spend all day diving in to the numbers. Sarah, for our conversation today, we're going to focus in on data point 4.09 on depression and suicide. And new numbers have come out that show significant increase in the rate of suicide in Calumet, Outagamie, and Winnebago counties from 2016 to 2018. So the data is showing a troubling increase in the rate of suicide right here in our region. You're working on this issue every day with the New Mental Health Connection. Are you seeing those kinds of increases in your work? Does this fit with what you're seeing professionally?
Yeah, Josh. So I took a look at the Life Study, and there definitely is an increase. And I think something that's interesting and important to note is that over the last decade, nationally, there was on average about a 30% increase in the rate of suicide. And in the Tri-County area, so the counties that you mentioned in that same time period, we saw a 66% increase during that time. So definitely things for us to be looking at and working on. There is also another report that just was recently released called the Suicide in Wisconsin Report, Impact and Response. And in that report also, it was the data point noted was that in Wisconsin, men age 45 to 54 have the highest rate of suicide, which we've also seen in our Tri-County area. And in Wisconsin, the rate for those in that age group has more than doubled from 2010 to 2017. And for men, the rate of suicide is three times higher than that of women. So definitely seeing a lot of the same things in our local community as well as in our state. Another interesting point is the overall rate of suicide in the state of Wisconsin is 15.3, whereas nationally, it is 14.0. So a lot to think about and consider these days.
Yeah. Wow. Those numbers are just stunning. And I hate to rush past them because there's, when we're talking about something as significant as suicide, each instance, each case is a tragedy. And when we're talking about rates jumping by 60% over a decade and the rate for men triple that of women, these are really stunning statistics. And I would just want to take a step back for a moment, if we could, Sarah, because I'm looking again just at the latest data in the Life Study going from 2016 to 2018, and we see that substantial jump in the numbers. This is a time which was pre-pandemic. This was a time of, some cases, record low unemployment. What do we know about what's driving that increase? If we're looking at good economic times, this was prior to the pandemic coming. What do we know about why these jumps might be happening?
That's a great question. And one of the conversations about the increase in suicide on a national level is this concept of deaths of despair. So deaths of despair was a term that was coined by authors Case and Deaton in a book that they published in 2017. And those deaths of despair have been on the rise for the last decade. So when I talk about deaths of despair, I'm talking about those deaths that are due to alcohol use, drug overdose, and suicide in relationship to socioeconomic factors as well as level of education. So as you mentioned, Josh, during this time period of 2016 to 2018, we had record low unemployment. We were not in the middle of this pandemic. Yet we were seeing increases in deaths related to those factors for those method. So alcohol, drugs, and suicide related to socioeconomic and education levels. And what we know in Wisconsin is that those with a high school diploma or less do have a higher rate of suicide than those with college or some college or more education. So it's a complicated issue. Yeah. And there is never one single factor that causes an increase in suicide. And right now, we're looking at the depths of despair concept and how it relates to our local community and potentially that increase that we saw from 2016 to 2018.
You know, again, I'll just repeat that each one of these cases, anytime suicide happens, it's a tragedy and so many are left behind wondering why. And we can't always know those answers, right, Sarah? We aren't always going to have firm answers for why someone took that action, let alone seeing trends on a national, regional level, being able to pinpoint reasonings for some of that. We just can't get that specific.
Right.
Yeah. But yet we do often see, and even in the life study, data point, again, our focus today, data point 4.09, both covering depression and suicide. Those two things are often related, and that notion of deaths of despair gets at some of that, where hopelessness is motivating that suicidality, that thinking that I don't have any better options than to take my own life. When we look beyond things like depression, what are some of these other motivators? Could it be economic pressure? Does someone feel, oh my gosh, I lost my job and I don't have prospects for a new one. I've got a mortgage payment coming. Is that something that can take someone to that extreme despair that might lead to suicide?
Yeah. So, you know, again, just reiterating your point, every suicide is a tragedy and the wake and the ripple effect of suicide is far reaching. And you know, the thing with suicide is you don't really know until you're looking back almost retrospectively to see all of the factors that may have been going on in a person's life that contributed to them dying by suicide. So suicide is not ever one single factor. There are multiple circumstances typically going on for someone for an extended period of time that result in emotional pain. And you mentioned that with the idea of hopelessness. And for people who are in extended period of emotional pain, there is a tunnel vision that can happen where the only way out that they can see is by suicide. Mm-hmm. So emotional pain can be a lot of different things, right? It can be this perceived burdensomeness, job loss, financial issues. Isolation or lack of connection can cause emotional pain. You know, physical health issues can contribute to that feeling of burdensomeness and emotional pain related to that. Oftentimes, relationship issues are a huge contributing factor leading up to an event or causing emotional pain. And then you throw in those AODA issues, alcohol, drugs, and those also can contribute to suicide. So just as important as understanding what motivates someone to die by suicide, I think we also need to throw in there the concept of protective factors, which mitigate those risk factors. And those are the things we can do something about. We can connect with somebody. We can reach out. We can simply sit and be with them. Sometimes it's just being there and allowing that person to be in that space of emotional pain and know that they're not alone can be more powerful than any of us really can recognize.
That's great advice right there. And we're going to talk a little later on in our conversation about what more we can do, how we can reach out effectively to those we think may be struggling with some of these issues. And we are going to talk a little bit more in when we come back after the break, Sarah, about the nexus between suicide and substance abuse and how those things are connected. But the last thing I want to ask you before we take a break, we were talking about depression. From a mental health perspective, is depression and loneliness, are those the same thing or are those seen as somewhat different phenomenon?
I think that they are different and distinct, yet one can encapsulate the other, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So people who are depressed often feel lonely, but people can feel lonely and not necessarily have clinical depression. So I think that they can go together, but that they're absolutely separate as well. I think, too, that one of the things that's important to note is that having a mental health diagnosis is not a prerequisite when we're talking about suicide.
Yeah.
I think that oftentimes the research has shown us that depression and anxiety often exist at a clinical level for some folks who die by suicide, but certainly not all.
Mm. Such important. That's exactly what I was looking for right there, is that notion of mental health diagnosis and suicide not necessarily being connected. And some of these things can be mild, some can be severe. Again, each case is unique, and that's one of the big challenges of tackling this issue. But that's exactly what we're doing in this hour,
correct,
talking about suicide as part of our Life in Motion series. And September is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, as well as Recovery Month. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little more about the connection between substance abuse and suicide. And later we'll look at reducing the stigma of mental illness and helping those who are struggling with depression to avoid reaching the point where suicidal ideation enters their mind. We're talking with Sarah Bassing Sutton, Community Suicide Prevention Coordinator with the New Mental Health Connection. We'll continue this conversation after this when Fresh Take continues here on WHBY. In about 10 minutes, we'll be looking for ways to reverse the troubling increase in suicide rates here in the Fox Valley. But right now, we want to explore the connection between suicide and substance abuse with Sarah Bassing Sutton, Community Suicide Prevention Coordinator with the New Mental Health Connection. September is both Suicide Prevention Awareness Month and National Recovery Month. So, Sarah, I'm guessing that may not be a coincidence. Talk to us a little bit about the connection between substance abuse and suicide.
Yeah, so often when a toxicology report is done on someone who dies by suicide, frequently one in four are found to have some sort of substance in their system. One in four reported an alcohol use issue that contributed to suicide in Wisconsin from 2013 to 2017. So all of the suicides that happened during that time where there was a tox screening done, alcohol was found in one of four of those deaths. I think it's also important to note that generally most individuals had more than one substance on board. Mm. So I would say that it is pretty frequent that alcohol, drugs, and suicide can be intermingled. When the pandemic started, there were some studies done that showed that the increase in alcohol sales mm-hmm. was 60%. And I think that it's important to note that when people engage in treatment, recovery is not only possible, but it's expected. So even when people are using chemicals to potentially self-medicate to soothe emotional pain, that can quickly become an unhealthy coping skill. Mm-hmm. The substances that have been found in suicides in Wisconsin from 2014 to 2017, the most common substances were alcohol, benzodiazepines, antidepressants, and opioids. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things going on, and definitely related.
Sarah, before the break, you were talking a little bit about some of the underlying causes that can lead people to think about suicide. One of those was depression. I'm curious, can we say that alcohol abuse exacerbates depression? If you're already feeling some of this emotional pain you talked about and you're self-medicating with chemicals, can that actually make those conditions worse?
Absolutely. Alcohol is a depressant. Mm-hmm. So if you're depressed and you throw on some more of a depressant yeah. into your system, certainly not going to help those thoughts. Yeah. I think part of the other danger in using alcohol or drugs as a unhealthy coping skill is that it takes away inhibitions. So those things that might weigh heavily in your mind as a protective factor when you're sober or haven't been drinking or there's no chemicals in your system may not feel as heavy or as important to you when you're under the influence. So, yeah.
Yeah. I know, given the culture that we have here in Wisconsin, alcohol is often part of parties and gatherings and even work events and things. It can be very difficult to avoid alcohol just because of the cultural norms that we have here in Wisconsin. So again, not assigning that a causality, but just saying it does complicate the ability to try to control some of those urges, impulses, addictions, et cetera.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, absolutely. You know, and I think that when folks recognize that they feel the need to have a chemical or alcohol in order to relax or to manage moods, that could be an indication that, there's something to look at.
Mm-hmm. I know that's where I want to end this conversation here, because I think in our day-to-day life, we sometimes think about those dangerous chemicals, you know, opioids and cocaine and those hard drugs. And then we think about them in a different sense, the other kind of drugs, alcohol, tobacco, caffeine, those we can buy at the store. And yet they're still drugs, and those chemicals are still managing our moods, as you said. So what are some of the signs that using these chemicals, as maybe, you know, I have a beer at the end of the day to unwind, between that and downing a 12-pack, obviously there's a line somewhere where this becomes a bigger problem. What are some of the signs that this substance use is becoming abuse?
Yeah, that's a great question and an important distinction, I think. And so, you know, again, feeling the need, like you can't relax or you can't have fun without that to manage a mood, might be an opportunity to take a look at that. I think that typically the use of alcohol and drugs is a temporary solution to a much larger problem, right? So this attempt to numb or escape, but typically when you're using alcohol or any chemicals in that way, it causes more problems than solves them. So people will start to see issues in their relationships, issues with work. When the amount of time that you spend using, planning to use, or recovering from using, so start to interfere with those activities of daily living, a good indication that there might be an opportunity to take a look there. You know, the other signs that using is a problem are some of those more overt and obvious signs, but certainly it doesn't have to get to this level either, where there are legal issues, getting intoxicated when you didn't intend to, binging and having blackouts. You know, those are the really big signs and symptoms to be aware of that things have gotten out of control. And perhaps there's an opportunity to take a look and see if using is a problem.
Yeah, that's some great advice there. That feeling like you need it, like you can't have fun or you aren't going to be in a good mood without it. That, I think, maybe the term dependency starts coming into the equation.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, you're dependent on it in order to achieve a state of relaxation or achieve a good time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and again, this is something that can happen in innocent ways, and maybe it happens once or twice. It's when it becomes a chronic issue, it's leading to legal issues, it's causing problems at work. That's when we reach those severe levels where more greater levels of intervention may be required or treatment might be necessary. But as you said, it doesn't need to get to that level. And oftentimes, it's those who are around the people who are feeling this way, who might be even slowly descending down a bad spiral. The people who are around them on a daily basis are that front line of potentially trying to get them on a different path. And that's where I want to take our conversation next. We're talking about suicide rates. September is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. And I want to know what we're doing now to try and address this issue, how we're trying to reduce the stigma connected with mental illness, and what we can do to help our loved ones who may be facing these kind of challenges. We're talking with Sarah Bassing Sutton, Community Suicide Prevention Coordinator with the New Mental Health Connection. Outstanding insights. One more segment left, Sarah. Really looking forward to talking solutions here on the other side of this break when we return with more Fresh Take on WHBY. Fresh Take is brought to you by Hooper Law Office. For your elder law and estate planning needs, call Sarah Kahns and Peter Harbach at 920-250-9959. Hooper Law Office, providing a pathway to your legacy. Welcome back to Fresh Take. I'm your host, Josh Duclo, with more conversations to get you thinking, not tell you what to think. In this hour, we're thinking about how to restore hope and reverse the troubling rise in the rate of suicide here in the Fox Cities. Check out the latest data in the Life Study, data point 4.09, talking about suicide and depression, showing a troubling increase in the suicide rate here between 2016 and 2018 in all three Fox Valley counties. We're talking about that with Sarah Bassing Sutton, Community Suicide Prevention Coordinator with the new Mental Health Connection. Sarah, your job is coordinating suicide prevention efforts across the region. So I know we could probably spend the next hour detailing all the different things that are happening. Give us kind of a high-level overview of some of the attempts we're making to reverse these trends.
There are a lot of really fantastic things happening in our community. And I want to say almost as a result of the way that the COVID pandemic has flipped everything on its head, it has really provided us an opportunity to take a critical look at the current systems of care and to identify opportunities for innovations and ways to respond to mental health and suicide crises differently. So we have some fantastic community collaborations that occur and are continuing to develop new and different relationships in how they serve the community when we're talking about mental health and suicide crisis. So we are talking about our law enforcement, our mental health providers, our healthcare systems, county mental health, as well as involving those with lived experience in this coordinated effort to really take a critical look at how we do things now. And because everything's happening differently, what can we do different? Where are there opportunities for innovation to really change the way that this looks? And this is definitely a tri-county approach with some fantastic community collaborators.
And I am not surprised to hear that. That is something our region is known for, is working together and getting all the right people at the table. And I'm interested in that point you made there, that the pandemic actually provided an opportunity to sort of stress test the programs and the support that we have out there and find ways to improve those, bring more people into the effort and provide even more support, knowing that this is going to increase the need for that kind of support as well, right?
Right. Yeah. So, you know, the pandemic has really kind of created this perfect storm, if you will, for mental health concerns to rise to the surface. Yeah. And in recognizing that, you know, our community mental health providers had to do things differently, right? We introduced telehealth in a whole new way, and there were some opportunities for some urgent available appointments. And so how do we leverage what we have now in a new way of responding and filling those appointments, regardless of, you know, ability to pay, so to speak. And so we're working on all of these opportunities to potentially redesign our system response to crisis. One of the other things that the community is working on through our local Zero Suicide Coalition is a awareness campaign targeting that high-risk age group, 45 to 54-year-old men, and really helping to inform the resources that are out there to reach out for help and how to do that. I think the other way to kind of help turn things around are also accessing the trainings that are available. Gatekeeper trainings are often referred to, QPR, ECPR, Youth Mental Health First Aid. All of these used to be in-person opportunities and have since transitioned to virtual opportunities. And so those are available in our community as well with local trainers. So I think that COVID has really thrown us all for a loop and also created some opportunities to learn how to do some things differently and work together in a different way.
Yeah, and if there was ever a region that was going to take that opportunity and maximize it, this is the one. I know we've talked with Lynn McLaughlin from Dandelions offering eCPR training through Levin. I've had her on the show. And so that's a great bit of advice right there, Sarah, is if you want to be in a position to help someone you may know who would find themselves in one of these struggles, then being equipped with the right skills is a good way to get started. You can take that training before you need it, and that way when you find yourself in that situation, you can put it to use.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good one. So, okay, we talked about, yes, coronavirus has certainly thrown us for a loop. That is the understatement of the year, perhaps. And so this is also creating a lot of magnifying or multiplying effects on some of the stresses people may have been living with anyway. You were already struggling to make your bill payments. Now you lost hours or lost a job. Maybe it's a family member who was actually contracted the disease, and that's created some financial or other types of difficulties. As we know, people are dealing with the stress of the pandemic. What are some of the signs or changes we should be watching for to see someone who might be maybe going a little further in a negative direction than we'd like to see, maybe showing some warning signs that they are struggling with their mental health? What should we be watching for?
Yeah, that's a really important point. You know, the uncertainty of the pandemic, how long it will go on, and the isolation that some people are feeling because of the conditions of the pandemic have certainly complicated all of those factors that we've already talked about.
Right.
So if you are seeing a compilation of these things that I'm about to mention, it's never one single thing, because let's face it, we all have days where we may exhibit one or more of these signs. But when we're seeing some of these signs over an extended period of time, there may be an opportunity to intervene. So if someone is talking about not wanting to live or not wanting to be around anymore, or even talking about being a burden, so for those folks who have lost employment, they may be feeling like a burden financially, and recognizing that emotional pain. If you're seeing friends or loved ones withdrawing and isolating more, you know, there's this idea of, you know, physical distance, but we still need to have that social connection.
Mm-hmm.
And if that social connection is not there, that might be a reason to be concerned. Increase in risk-taking behavior. So an increase in drug use or alcohol use, displaying of major mood swings. So oftentimes it can look like anxious or agitated, or seeking revenge in 1 week or multiple weeks, and then all of a sudden there's a calm and that angst and anxiety and intensity is no longer there. Those drastic mood swings can really be a warning sign. And even a change in sleep patterns, sleeping more, sleeping less. And again, it's important to note that you want to see the whole picture, not just one of these things, because let's face it, some days we need more sleep than others,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And so it's not just one of these things that would be concerning. But when you start recognizing, you know, one or more of these things and been hearing about it for a while, definitely take that opportunity to ask that person if they're okay. And even, you know, asking, are you thinking about suicide? Asking that question is not going to put the thought into someone's head that suicide is the answer. They are going to be relieved. They are going to feel like you are a person that can contain the answer to that question. And then you can reach out to get the professional assistance if that is what is needed.
So asking that question, saying, I've noticed this. I want to ask, are you thinking about suicide? Has that thought entered your mind? That's an okay question to ask.
Absolutely. Because if someone's thinking about suicide, that is a heavy burden that they are holding on their own.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't have to use the word suicide. Are you thinking about killing yourself?
Okay.
Are you thinking about hurting yourself?
Okay.
It will be that valve to relieve some of the pressure that person is holding on to all by themselves because they feel isolated, alone, and in emotional pain. And if you can sit with that person and allow them to speak, you're going to make a huge difference.
Just a couple minutes left for this important conversation about suicide here. In September is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, so we will be having additional conversations on this. It's also Recovery Month, so we'll be talking more about substance abuse as well. But Sarah, I want to conclude our time together today on this notion of stigma. The stigma that goes with somebody acknowledging that they are struggling with their mental health. The stigma that might go with someone acknowledging that they are seeing a counselor or talking to a therapist. Is that notion of stigma, are we making progress on countering the feeling of stigma? And is that a key to trying to tackle this rising trend towards suicide?
Yeah, I think we are making progress. And evidence to that fact is a national survey that just came out through the Action Alliance for Suicide Prevention that showed that 52% of people surveyed are more open to talking about mental health due to COVID. And I think that we are making progress because we understand now that language matters. So the way that we talk about mental health and the way that we talk about suicide really, really makes a difference when we're talking about stigma. So we don't say committed suicide. We don't say that person is bipolar, right? I wouldn't say you are cancer if you had cancer.
Right.
Saying that somebody committed suicide is along the lines of saying they committed a crime, right? There's a real negative connotation there.
Right.
So someone dying by suicide is a more appropriate way. And there's a whole list of language matters opportunities in the Suicide in Wisconsin Impact and Resources Report. It's on the DHS website. I would really encourage folks to take a look at that if you're really interested in knowing more about appropriate uses of language as we talk about mental health and suicide. So
yeah,
I think we're making progress. And I think, you know, as we do continue to use more sensitive language around this topic, people are going to feel more comfortable and more welcomed to share it. And we're already seeing some of those national level polls and reports that are showing just that.
That's great to hear. And anybody mm-hmm. who's interested in being a part of this solution, there is plenty of information out there for you. As Sarah just said, on the DHS website, that's the State Department of Health Services. Also at the New Mental Health Connection, you can Google these and you can find all sorts of resources there to learn more about the issue of mental health, stigma, suicide, and how we can talk about this in a way that reduces the troubling increase in the trend towards suicide in our region and nationally. Sarah's working on it every day. We can all be a part of the solution, and particularly in September, Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. We really appreciate the time you took today, Sarah, to join us and talk about this important issue. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and thanks for tackling this important issue.
Absolutely. Sarah Bassing-Sutton is Community Suicide Prevention Coordinator with the New Mental Health Connection. And we'll be talking more